From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark, here again with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, talking with you about what's new in healthy living, sharing some down-to-earth advice and great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question, the number to call is 800-462-7413. Of course, along with your call, some topics to talk about, Zorba.
Yes, swimming naked in high school, what boys did in Chicago, New York, and other places back in the day. And let me tell you, I was in back in the day. So we're going to talk about the advantages and disadvantages of naked swimming when you're in high school.
I'm interested. That's coming up. What else?
Alcohol abuse among older adults. It's on the rise, as is HIV, as is drug abuse among adults over the age of 50. So we'll talk about senior citizens and how they should pay attention to the same things that we tell our young adults to pay attention to. This is a public health issue.
And a yummy recipe?
Heirloom tomato and herb salad. You know, I love tomatoes. Do you love tomatoes?
I like tomatoes.
Oh, I love tomatoes. I just love tomatoes. Do you like herbs?
Yeah, I love herbs.
Do you like salad?
Salad's great. Salad's great.
Well, if you love salad, we've got a wonderful, simple, easy recipe, something that you can whip up. Even you, Tom, could whip it up in just 5 minutes and it would make a difference.
I doubt it. Other people can do that.
There we go.
Phones now, Zorba. Let's see what listeners have to ask. 800-462-7413. 800-462-7413, as we welcome our first caller, a listener in Middleton, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi, Zorba. I got bitten by chiggers 26 days ago while on a field trip in Pennsylvania. And they're slowly getting better, but the bites are still there. And I did a lot of searching on the web to figure out how to treat them, and I really couldn't find anything. So as I was listening to Zorba last week, I said, well, maybe I'll ask Dr. Zorba. Maybe he knows what to do.
Well, chiggers, you know, they're kind of like, I don't even know what a chigger is. You know, it's kind of like when you're going, what exactly?
A little tiny thing.
That's right.
Yeah, they're actually in the spider family or class of organism. It's an arachnid.
I mean, I've heard of chiggers. I mean, I know how to treat insect bites. So it's an arachnid. What kind of a field trip was this? Because you're using fancy words like arachnid, I mean, which are one step above. That's a $10 word in my mind. My mother would never know what an arachnid is. She'd probably think it was something that you ate, you know, like it was a special kind of a pastry.
Well, it was a field trip for a science thing. I'm a professor at UW-Madison.
Oh, gotcha.
So we were out in Pennsylvania up in the woods sampling groundwater, and mm-hmm. I must have was sitting around eating my lunch, and they must have jumped up on me.
That's very interesting.
And bit me.
Yeah, you know, I think of that in the same realm as cooties, which, of course, don't really exist. Cooties are not the same as chiggers. So where were the bites?
My ankles mm-hmm. and some on my calves, mm-hmm. and a few got up to my inner thigh also.
Okay.
And the itching is unbelievable.
Oh, yeah.
The itchiest thing I've ever had.
Yeah.
And nothing, I mean, I put all sorts of stuff on them. And
what? What'd you put on it?
Well, I started with hydrocortisone. Mm-hmm. I have some betamethasone mm-hmm. cream mm-hmm. that I had
strong
used.
Strong steroid cream. Mm-hmm.
Finally, in the end, in order to sleep at mm-hmm. night, I took a Benadryl.
You took one or two tablets, 25 or 50 milligrams?
I took two, and that knocked me out uh-huh. and allowed me to sleep. Uh-huh. But I can't take that stuff all day long.
No, it would put you out. Are you taking any antihistamines during the day, any Zyrtec or Claritin over the counter?
No.
That's what you should do. Get Zyrtec. It's stronger than Claritin. Take one tablet during the day in the morning when you wake up. If that's not enough, I would take a second tablet, and you might tolerate it. It might make you a little tired. If that doesn't work, add Zantac to it, over-the-counter Zantac, which is an H1 inhibitor. And sometimes that'll actually help with itching, too. And I would take 150 milligrams to 300 milligrams of Zantac once or twice a day, and that might help also. Getting back to local treatment, can you see these little sores on your body?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. Oh, they're not little. Uh-huh. Some of them are over a centimeter. There's a core, and then there's a red spot that's sometimes over a centimeter in diameter. Uh-huh. So they're quite significant. Yeah.
As I said, I would take a Zyrtec, one in the morning if you're still itching, one at noon, and if that's not enough, I would take some. I would take some Zantac, 150 milligrams in the morning to 300, another 150 to 300 at noon, because you want to do that. If that fails, call your doc, and you may need a course of steroids, like a 7 to 10 day course of tapering steroids. But I think I would try the over the counter stuff first.
Okay.
How was the trip?
It was successful. Mm-hmm. We had a great time. The weather was lovely, and got to see my friends and colleagues.
Cool.
This one little, hitch.
Yeah. Did anyone else get chiggers, or were you there?
I was there with a graduate student, and she got a much smaller case of them, but she did get bit.
So she got bit, too. So you may want to pass that on to her, too. That'll be part of your email today.
Yeah, I'll tell her for sure.
Okay, thanks so much.
Okay, thank you, Doctor. Bye.
Bye-bye. We appreciate that call at 800-462-7413.
It's funny. I think of chiggers, and as I said, I put it in my same brain as cooties.
Yeah.
Now, cooties don't really exist. I mean, the cooties are like any kind of a bite. But, obviously, the arachnoid part of my brain just was not educated enough. So I'll have to take Arachnoid 101.
800-462-7413. Before our next call, Zorba, boys swimming naked high school.
Now, where'd you go to high school?
Shorewood High.
Shorewood High. Did you swim? Was there a high school in Shorewood?
Oh, a wonderful high school. I mean, buildings. Yeah. One, two, three.
Yeah.
Fairly large buildings. Mm-hmm. A theater.
A theater. Oh yeah,
and a swimming pool.
Yeah, not Shorewood near Madison. This is Shorewood near Milwaukee.
Yeah, exactly. That's suburb of Milwaukee.
Fancy suburb, right?
Yeah, we were the poorest people in Shorewood.
That's right. We were in the apartments along the railroad
tracks.
That's right. On the wrong side of the tracks. You took care of the Shorewood people. So, did you swim naked or did you swim clothed? Did you swim?
I did swim, and we had suits. We had swimming suits.
Yeah, we did not have swimming suits in Chicago. We swam naked, and it was kind of interesting. So imagine, here it is, you're 13 or 14 years of age. You go to the Chicago Public School, and everyone had to learn swimming, because at that time, one of the big issues was the fact that lots of people were drowning. Drowning was a very common problem in the 30s and the 40s and 50s. People would go into Lake Michigan and other lakes, and they would drown because they never learned how to swim. So in the Chicago Public Schools, you had to take 4 years of swimming. And the girls had swimsuits, wool swimsuits that they washed. Mm-hmm. Imagine how itchy they were. But the boys swam naked. The idea was, this is how you learned hygiene. Because if you swam naked,
you have to swim naked.
You would have to. Well, but you had to take a shower before you swam naked. So you had to take a shower with all the other boys. You're 14. And from the age of 14 and 18, there is a certain, shall we say, developmental process that's going on within the male body as well as the female body. So you're kind of glancing and looking and can be a little bit, embarrassing at times, but it was considered part of growing up and becoming a man. You would swim naked, Are you kidding?
In the
of course.
Room? Oh yeah.
But there was, of course, there were. Are you kidding? You're high school students. Of course, you're going to joke. You think it was like not joking? This was also Chicago, also some of the boys who were developed sooner would take the towels. You had towels that you had to hand in and slap you on the butt. You remember? You would take that towel and make What did you? I don't know. You know what the name was? You would kind of try to hurt the other person with the towel.
I don't know. There was a name for it.
That was terrible.
Now this is a health show. Is there a health issue here?
Well, the health issue was, the idea was, you would learn how to clean your body and you would be healthy. No, it's just kind of an interesting.
What's a mental health issue?
Well, it wasn't just that. It was a drowning issue. So when I went to the University of Illinois my first year, then I saw the light, moved up to Wisconsin, and I've been here ever since. But at the University of Illinois, one of the things to graduate is that you had to be able to swim across a pool. Didn't matter, even if you held your breath, that was a requirement for graduation from the University of Illinois. Mm-hmm. And at the University of Illinois, you would take 4 years of physical education in college.
Mm.
But that included, physical education included fencing. I took fencing. Mm-hmm. Ballroom dancing. That was part of physical education, and that was with the girls because they had to take 4 years. That was very popular. That was hard to get into, mm-hmm. ballroom dancing with girls. And then, of course, there were other things, lacrosse. But everyone had to swim across the pool. Yeah. So here it is. You had to take swimming. I took it in the wintertime. I remember it was terrible. You had to go. But that was also all male at the University of Illinois, and that was naked, too. Yeah.
Some guys even swim naked as they get older.
Yes, they do. They do swim naked. So I'd say, you know, there's stories that say that. So at the University of Wisconsin, there was the Red Gym. And the Red Gym, they had a pool in the middle of the locker room. Yeah. It was the middle of the locker room. There was a swimming pool in the Red Gym. And the Red Gym swimming pool, the men were there, and they swam naked. Women did not swim in the locker room, which was right next to the student union. Until one day in 1970, a woman showed up in the pool and stripped down and swam naked. Mm-hmm. And you know what happened the next day? Everyone needed to have a swimsuit on at the swimming pool. That's what happened the next day. I don't remember if it was 1969 or 1970. The swimming pool at the Red Gym was liberated.
There was another fix for that that didn't happen.
Yes, and that, we won't go on to that because it's not this type of show.
Yeah, let's change the topic. Welcoming a caller now, Zorba, in Jacksonville, Florida. Hi.
How are you guys doing?
Fine. How can we help?
I recently transitioned to a plant-based diet, and I keep hearing all these rumors that you have to take B12 or you have to take certain vitamins, and I was wondering if I really do, if that's really important.
Well, the B12 is a fascinating topic. So, first of all, B12 only comes from animal products. There's no doubt about it. It is not manufactured by plant products. And yet people who are vegetarians and people who are vegans, a number of them have a normal B12 level. You need just a pinch of B12. And so studies, this is a number of years ago, tried to find out where the B12 comes from. And the B12 that vegans get and any other serious vegetarian that has no animal products, they get it from insect parts that are present in vegetables. In other words, your insects, no matter what you do, no matter how much you clean it, there are little bits, little legs, little arms, you know, we were talking about arachnoids, little things within there, and that's where you actually get B12 from. So the answer is, you don't have to worry, because as vegan as you are, you're still eating animal products. They're called insects. Sorry to dissuade you. But so, no, I haven't seen any evidence that vegans are actually B12 deficient. You do not have to do it. If you're concerned, of course, you could take a multivitamin of B12. But now, what motivated you to become a vegan?
I really just didn't feel that meat was important in this day and age to eat, especially the way it's being produced, the way it's, you know, kind of being held and how they, you know, turn it into meat. So I kind of just wanted to get rid of all those, you know, antibiotics and extra things I didn't want to consume and turn into a more pure diet. Mm-hmm. And I'm, you know, I'm starting a garden. I'm trying to really change my whole health around into something more. Yeah.
You bring up a really good point. It's turning around your health that really counts, looking towards a diet that sings to you, paying attention to health, and moving forward with that. And I think the more people do that, frankly, the healthier they are, and no matter what they do, vegan or Mediterranean diet. It's actually looking and trying to move away from industrialized foods. Michael Pollan, who's a great food writer who wrote The Omnivore's Dilemma, and a number of other books, you know, said once you get over four or five ingredients, you're dealing really with industrialized food. And I had a question. I write a newspaper column, and it's in Jacksonville in the newspaper there. And I was looking at one of the questions that I got, which was, what do I think about a vegetarian burger? So veggie burgers. And so I looked up veggie burgers, and most of the veggie burgers have like 15, 20 things in them. I mean, they're made to look like a burger, and as a result, you know, they have textured soy. And I thought, what is textured soy? I have no idea. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, is it non-GMO soy or is it GMO soy? And I thought, you know, if you want to have a burger, why not take eggplant do it the right way, put it on the grill, have some nice, peppers that are roasted peppers, put that on, and have a wonderful eggplant and roasted pepper sandwich. And don't try to make an artificial burger. Just try to make a good vegan sandwich. And you can come up with wonderful, wonderful recipes. So
that's one thing I realized is people are just switching from one processed food to another type of processed food. So I'm staying away from all those vegan meats and all that stuff because it's just processing vegan food. It's not any better, I don't think.
I agree with you totally. It's an industrialized product, and industrialized products are just that. You're dealing with a whole different mechanism of action, and even though it may say non-GMO, if it's got 10 or 15 things in there, including things you don't understand, like textured soy protein, I don't understand what that is. And if I don't understand it, they must be putting it in, so they're obfuscating what is actually going into the process, and that means it's industrial. And if you want to stay away from it, stay away from it. Do natural. And that means, like you said, staying away from those fake vegan. Fake vegan food is just like a Twinkie.
I think it's just as bad.
In fact, I think Twinkies are vegan. I don't think there's any dairy product in Twinkie. I think a Twinkie is, a Twinkie may be a vegan dessert. Now that I think about it, I'll have to look up what's
in a Twinkie. They last forever.
They last forever. That's right. They last forever. Thanks. Well, thanks for your call. I appreciate it.
Thank you for your time. Have a good day, guys.
Sure, you too.
I wonder if Twinkie is a vegan product. It's probably made with milk solid. Twinkie is just a vegetarian dessert, isn't it?
No. As you know, Zorba, my wife and I are not vegetarians or vegans.
That's right.
We are starting, my wife first, and then I'm kind of starting to think, too, because of the way animals are treated, animals that are raised for food, that gives me pause at my age. I didn't used to care much.
So giving you pause to look towards more humane ways of raising animals?
Yeah.
Well, there is a difference. Yeah. There is a difference. Well, if you read Michael Pollan's book, Free Range Chickens, most of them mean they open the door during a certain amount of the day, but they teach the they never taught the chickens they could go outside, and they don't go outside. So they're not necessarily really free range. It's a lot of it is fake. Yeah. And it's the same with large-scale organic farms. Some are real, some are not real. It's a complicated thing. It's not as easy to become humane in terms of your food eating as it is. But we can move more towards it.
Yeah. 800-462-7413, our number. That's 800-462-7413. And before we take a quick break now, Zorba, how about we let one of our listeners give us a piece of her mind in a segment we call Disagreeing with the Doc.
Disagreeing with the Doc. Disagreeing with the Doc. Oh, oh, oh.
The following email came to us via Facebook from a listener named Vicky. She writes, "Shame, shame on you, Dr. Zorba."
I can just see the fingers going like that, in the shame way.
Being in the medical profession,
you
should know better.
I should.
Never use a microwave to cook food.
Oh, never. I should never use a microwave to cook food.
I
should have known better than even think of using a microwave. To use the electromagnetic field, the microwave part, I should only use the infrared part of the electromagnetic to cook field. I shouldn't use the microwave part of the electromagnetic field.
Let me finish the email, then you can talk some more.
Right.
I was just listening to you talking to the lady about her BLT salad. Mm-hmm. And you said you cook your bacon in the microwave.
That's right.
The hair stood up on my neck.
That's right.
How could you,
of all people,
say you cook with
bacon.
The microwave?
That's right. Me. How could I possibly cook with a microwave? Yeah, go ahead.
Well, that's your turn.
But she didn't comment on the bacon. I mean, the real question she asked is, how could you, of all people, eat bacon? I mean, the bacon is the problem, not the microwave. It's an electromagnetic spectrum. That's what it is.
We've talked about this before. There's no harm.
Not at all. There's cosmic rays on one side. On one side of the electromagnetic, the visual spectrum on one side, you've got infrared and you've got microwaves. It's part of the same spectrum. It moves electrons. When the electrons move a lot, then they develop heat, and then we cook it, and microwaves are just fine. Now, How about microwaving in plastic that is not approved for microwaving? That may be a different issue because then you're getting some chemical that may be in your food. That I can agree with. But in a microwave thing, I think it's fine. Now, ask me, Tom, ask me, what do I cook in the microwave other than warming up leftovers?
Zorba, what do you cook in the microwave? Other than warming up leftovers.
The only thing I cook in the microwave, other than warming up leftovers or defrosting, is bacon. And why do I cook bacon in the microwave? Because I'm too damn lazy to cook it in a pan, and it's easier to cook it, put the little thing then in the dishwasher and get it totally clean, and I like the taste of it. So the bacon lovers of the world will hate that idea.
So, Vicky, start cooking in a microwave.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to happen. But thank you so much. Thank you so much for your support of the show, and keep on listening.
At least previous support of the show.
That's right.
Feel like doing some Zorba shaming, just post on our Facebook page or just send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
More of your calls coming up, as well as another interesting topic. And we'll be hearing from the Grammar Police, of course. All coming up on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That number again, if you have a question for Zorba, 1-800-462-7413. But Zorba, before our next call, heirloom tomato and herb salad.
Right. So it's interesting. First of all, I happen to love tomatoes. You said you
like them. I like tomatoes.
I love tomatoes. And when I was in college, I didn't have a lot of money. I had very little money. I mean, I wasn't poor. But I had to choose between whether I was going to have a tomato or I was going to have liquid milk. I mean, literally, that's what my kind
of budget was. Why was that your choice? You can have a whole lot of other things.
Well, because dried milk was half the price of, powdered milk was half the price of liquid milk.
I see. You're saying financially.
If I had powdered milk, Sanilac, which was actually pretty good, at least I don't drink it now, then I could have tomatoes. We're talking about out-of-season tomatoes. They're still expensive. You know, you still go to the store. Tomatoes are like $2, $3 a pound. They're expensive.
Yeah.
You don't think of them as expensive.
You don't buy. My wife buys.
I buy and I cost compare and I still can't.
When I do buy, and I'm buying more than I used to, I don't pay any attention to what anything costs.
Oh, I can't get out of.
And I don't have a lot of money.
I can't get out of cost comparing. And you know what? At my age, you know, I've got a limited life expectancy. You'd think I could go in the store and buy any tomato I want to.
Yes, I think you could. I think you could.
I can't bring myself to do it. If the tomatoes are too expensive, I go for the cheaper tomatoes that don't. This is good. You know, the more we talk about this, the more ridiculous I think it is.
Zorba Pastor your health.
I mean, you know, I've got 10, 15 years of life. I could calculate how much tomatoes I could have a tomato budget, go over the budget. And then if I leave early, leave it for my children so they could buy tomatoes. I am not a miser. I'm just thrifty. But getting back to tomatoes, this is an heirloom tomato and herb salad, something to remind you of warm weather. Start out with 2 pounds of heirloom tomatoes.
2 pounds heirloom tomatoes.
That's right. A teaspoon of sea salt.
A little tea, sea salt.
Fresh ground black pepper. Third cup of extra virgin olive oil.
Third of a cup extra virgin olive oil.
Now, in In our house, we have three or four different kinds of extra virgin olive oils. They taste a little different. Some are much more robust. Mm-hmm. They have a fruitier taste. Some have a milder taste. And you may want to pick your extra virgin olive oil. I don't just think of them all as extra virgin because there's a difference. Just like vinegar, there's a difference between balsamic and other vinegars.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've
noticed.
I would
think you would like one better than the other. And
I do. I like the more robust.
Use that one all the time.
I use the more robust. That's what I do. Yeah. And then some balsamic vinegar that you like. And then a sprinkling of herbs. So in the summertime, we have a little herb garden. I used to have them in different parts of my house. Now I have it right in front of my front door. And the reason is I'm too lazy. And if it's too far away, I don't use them.
Yeah.
And if I look at it in my front door, I use the herbs that are there. Well, and I have tarragon, basil, chives.
Look, if you were lazy, you wouldn't have the herb garden.
That's true. If I were completely lazy, I would have the herb garden. That's right. If I'm not completely lazy.
Yeah.
But herb gardens are wonderful to have in the wintertime if you've got a south-facing window, because basil can grow all winter long, chives will grow, some of the other herbs, and it makes you feel good when you have something organic that you're taking and you're putting in your salad that you didn't buy that you're growing. Yeah. You're looking at me askance.
You're shaming me.
You're looking at me askance as if there's something.
Tom, you should do this.
I think you should have the herb garden. Monica would be so happy. You know, if you came home and you said, honey, I'm going to make an herb garden in the southern-facing window in the house,
say,
what would she
where
say?
Where is my husband?
That's what she'd say. Where is my husband? That's right. That's not my Tommy. Something is going on here. It's time for him to see a psychiatrist. So let's make it. Gather a couple pounds of ripe herb tomatoes, colors and sizes to look at. Cut them into various sizes and wedges. Don't just make them small, some big, some in half. Cherry tomatoes would be great, too. The yellow cherry tomatoes, I find, are sweeter than the red ones, and some you may want to leave out. Arrange them on a chilled plate. Sprinkle with sea salt or kosher salt and black pepper, and wait about 10 minutes.
What are we waiting for?
Well, what happens is the liquid that is in the tomato will begin to rub out and actually make a better taste outside.
Oh.
Don't do it instantly. You've got to wait about 10 minutes. It's very important. If you wait about 10 minutes and you do that, it comes out and it adds to the outside and to the taste. So if you just salt it and eat it, it's not the same thing.
Hmm.
Wait 10 minutes.
That's
put the clock on. Wait 10 minutes. Go turn on public radio for 10 minutes. Donate to your favorite station. Or go online and donate to Wisconsin Public Radio. Anyway, then drizzle with a little extra virgin olive oil and your favorite vinegar, balsamic, or cherry, or either one, and then put some torn herbs on the top of it that you like. Mm-hmm. But you've got to wait 10 minutes after the salt, and you'll find it actually has a different taste.
Okay.
To that. Very simple, easy salad. I'm into simple and easy this time of year, nothing complex.
Tell us where we can get the
You know, recipe. If you go to ZorbaPastor.org, you can find this recipe, other recipes, see photos of Tom and me. It's a wonderful website, ZorbaPastor.org, or again, find us on Facebook.
800-462-7413, that's our number, 800-462-7413. And Zorba, let's welcome our next caller, a listener in Norman, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, how can we help?
Well, I have a question. So my son has cystic fibrosis, and as you may know, the disease can cause multiple problems with the digestive system as well as the lungs, pancreas, and a variety of other areas of the body. My son's CF doctor prescribes him Miralax to be taken daily to help keep his bowels moving. Constipation can be a big issue with CF.
Mm-hmm.
I recently read an article that said Miralax has been shown, when taken on a regular basis, to cause neuropsychiatric problems, including aggression, mood swings, and rage. A statement from Bayer, the maker of Miralax, says that it is approved and labeled for use in adults and children 17 years and older for up to 7 days.
Mm-hmm.
My son is almost 12, and he takes Miralax every day and has taken it every day since he was about four. Should I be concerned about this warning? And do you recommend other things that might replace Miralax that are a little bit more natural?
Well, Miralax, by the way, is a very good product. When they say approved up to 7 days, that means when they went for FDA approval, they had people taking it up to 7 days and the FDA approved it, period. In other words, it doesn't mean this is a cover yourself CYA. You can figure out what the word A means. Thing, because they say, hey, it was approved for 7 days. You want to use it beyond 7 days, we have no comment. That's basically what we're saying. We're just telling you what the labeling said when it's approved. The thing about Miralax is that, well, first of all, when we look at laxatives overall, we know that cathartics, like Carter's Little Liver Pills, which changed because they had nothing to do with liver, into Carter's Liver Pills, and Ex-Lax, which has phenolphthalein, which are stimulative cathartics, so they stimulate the colon to move. We know those can be habit-forming and addictive, and people who take that on a regular basis cannot poop without it. And that became a big issue because that was common. Haley's MO, which was big, which was mineral oil and milk of magnesia. The idea was lubricate things, and if you lubricate things and use milk of magnesia on a regular basis, but milk of magnesia can also do something similar, and you can become habituated to it. I think that's much ado about nothing. I don't know there's any scientific evidence. I think this is a good example of junk science. You know, someone did a study and said there was aggression. I don't know why there would be aggression with this, because this is what we give for people when they're going to have a colonoscopy, and basically it just keeps fluid within the colon. So I think that if I had a son or a daughter and they had CF and the Miralax was working, I wouldn't change anything, because I don't think anything is safer than that.
Because I noticed that whenever he doesn't take it, like I'll go a week just to see what happens, and he gets horrible stomach cramping, and things are not moving.
Right.
I was just a little bit concerned about the polyethylene glycol that's inside the Miralax.
Well, that's basically, again, I can't remember the name. It's got a number on it, too. That basically is the stuff that works. The fact is this artificial product keeps water within the colon, and that's what we're using it for, and it is not absorbed into the body. And nobody ever tested it to see what it's like using long-term, but I have a number of adults mostly and some kids who use it on a regular basis. They're kids who have a, quote, lazy bowel that have been using Miralax in my practice for, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years, and there's there's no evidence that there's anything abnormal. Your son is doing well. You periodically try to see what it is. He's got CF. His big problem is CF, CF, CF. He's 12. Keep his bowels moving. You've got enough to do with pancreatic enzymes. Does he take pancreatic enzymes?
Yes, he does.
Yeah. How's he doing? How's his growth?
His growth is great. He's above the 50th percentile on everything. He's never been hospitalized.
Fabulous.
He's never had a feeding tube.
Wow.
You know, the model patient is what his doctor says.
Yeah, well, you're the model mom, aren't you?
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. He's a model patient because you're the model mom, and you handle it. It sounds like you handle it in the right way, in a very matter-of-fact way, like a kid with, you know, with diabetes. This is what we do in our family,
well,
right?
I have, and he was diagnosed at 2 weeks old, and ever since then, I've just made sure that he's had what he's needed, and just tried really hard to stick to a strict schedule and teach him how important it is.
Yeah, and so he's above the 50th percentile. And with CF kids, to tell others, they're usually short, they don't absorb food, there are lots of issues. But if you're rigorous and obsessive without being obsessive so the child becomes anxious and nervous, and it sounds like your child is very well adjusted to the whole thing.
Yes, okay, I appreciate that.
Good luck. Thanks. Keep up the good work.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And we appreciate the call at 800-462-7413.
You know, when you have a child or a loved one or an adult that you're caring for who has a chronic problem, really the goal is to be rigorous without being restrictive.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be a fine line and not. And if you do it in the right way, your child or the adult can live, especially with a child, they can live a normal life. 50th percentile for a kid with CF is incredible. By the way, none of my children were ever, they don't have CF. They were never in the 50th percentile. Because we don't have any length on either side of our family, but she sounds like she's doing the right stuff.
We appreciate that call. At 800-462-7413. And before the break now, Zorba, we love it when our listeners get social on our Facebook page. Time again for another round of Facebook feedback.
Facebook feedback.
The following message came to us from a listener named Denise. She writes, I've been listening to your show for years and actually became a family doctor myself as a novel sort of midlife crisis. I love the way you connect so quickly with strangers on the phone, and I try to emulate that quality with my own patients. You did say something on a recent show that I take exception to. You were talking about a study on the bacteria in dishwashing sponges.
Yes.
And dismissed the researcher as having OCD.
Yeah, I did.
I don't really care for using this diagnosis to characterize people who are getting hung up in details and perhaps reaching an inappropriate conclusion. I'm sure you know that OCD is a serious anxiety disorder that can be crippling, and that patients who have it often suffer a lot of shame because of it. I don't think it's kind to use the term trivially to describe someone who's just being a little foolish. I don't think you would have said it if you had thought about it, because you are always so kind
right.
To your listeners.
Right, so kind. Well, yes. I should respect the disease. I was using OCD in the non-disease mode.
Yeah.
So I should be more respectful when I say obsessive, when they suffer from OCD. And if I say it next time, I'll say it. I'm not dishing or I'm not disrespecting the people who have serious OCD. So I was taking obsessiveness a little bit trivially, because there's trivial obsession and then there's non-trivial obsession. But there definitely is trivial obsession in this world. And these are not the people who suffer from OCD. These are the people whose house is so clean. They don't have OCD. Yeah. They're so clean that when you walk into it, you realize there's no dust. I call these the white glove people, because there's no dust in the house. They're not necessary. They may be obsessive, but they don't have OCD. So thank you very much. I'll be careful next time I talk about that. But when I talk about the entire German population as having OCD, I think she knows I really don't mean that they have obsessive compulsive disease.
Let's keep those Facebook comments coming.
Please.
And you can always send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
More calls to come, as well as another interesting topic. All right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Again, that number, 800-462-7413. But Zorba, before our next call, not good news, alcohol abuse is rising among older adults.
That's right. Which really is not a good thing at all. And there are some issues that we have to address to look at it. And, you know, part of the issue is that baby boomers that are now in their 60s and the 70s are less frail, you know, than if you look back 20 years ago or 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. They're healthier. And so they often continue drinking patterns that they had that were, younger. And they've been more exposed and less disapproving of drug and alcohol abuse. In other words, they've been more moderate. They've been less puritanical, if you would, in that. And so what we're seeing is now we're seeing a rise in alcoholism for people who are older. And accompany that, and it may be part of it, is we're also seeing a rise in HIV infections, especially in men who are 50 years of age and older, 60 years of age and older. And we're seeing a rise in other sexually transmitted diseases, too. So there are things that we have to address as a society about the fact that when you get older, it still is, you know, and you're getting drunk once a week or twice a week, it's not a good thing. Yeah. You know, and we think of this as affecting college students and people in their 20s and their 30s, but it's
Are you saying that older people have been drinking too much for a long time?
Well,
or they
people,
start to drink when they get
older? Well, it's sort of a variety of that. As they get older and they have more time on their hands, there may be some older people that say, I think I'll go out and get drunk again, and they may get drunk in their house. And when you're older, you metabolize things differently. When you're in your 20s, you have more muscle mass than you do in your 60s.
Oh, yeah, also when you're older, you don't have anything else to do.
You don't have anything, right? No, you have less to do. That's exactly right. Yeah. So you have less to do. You have less muscle mass that metabolizes the drug or the alcohol stays in your system longer. And as a result, the other things that are the fact that if you fall and you're 65 and older, you're much more likely to break your hip. You know, when you're in your 20s and you fall, you're more likely to injure yourself, but you don't break your hip. And breaking your hip is a very serious problem when you're older.
Yeah.
So it's something that we have to start addressing as a society. Either you're doing it or you may know somebody who's doing it or as physicians, but it's a big issue. And once again, I'm mentioning the HIV issue because the biggest, if we look at the incidence of HIV, AIDS, and sex, older people often don't have to worry about pregnancy because they're older, and there's a place called the Villages in Florida that has the highest rate of very high rate of alcoholism, very high rate of HIV infection too in the country.
Yeah, actually, also as you get older, sometimes you're all alone.
So they're big issues. So I think if you're older, you know somebody who's older, it's something you should address and think about. If they're drinking too much, it's time to bring it up and seek help.
800-462-7413, our number, 800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, a listener with us in Stephensville, Texas. Hi.
Hi, there's only one S in Stephensville.
Oh, Stephenville, not Stephensville. Stephenville, I'm sorry.
What? That's fine. It's spelled with a P-H. It's the cowboy capital of the world. Now, honey, other places may say that they're the cowboy capital, but that's not right. Stephensville, Texas is the cowboy capital of the world.
Okay, honey. What's your question for Zorba?
Well, I'm kind of heavy. I had a wreck with a horse when I was training a horse in 1991, and I ended up, well, the saddle broke, and I got bucked off into a concrete driveway.
Oh,
and
wow.
I ruptured my kidney, I guess, because I wouldn't go to the doctor. I just wouldn't. I don't like doctors. So anyway, so they found out I started getting blood clots in 2007, and they were in my urine. Well, finally, I lay in the bathtub. I couldn't pass them anymore. I just couldn't pass them anymore after about 6 months. I told my son, okay, take me to the ER. So they did an MRI. They found out I had a big tumor, renal cell cancer, blah, blah, blah. And I had to have my kidney taken out with a big tumor. Well, now, ever since then, what did they do? They opened me up all the way across from my breastbone down to all the way around my belly button down and to take out the kidney and the tumor. Well, I gained a lot of weight, and my stomach pooches out. And so I've been doing a lot of, you know, I've been trying to get up. I've had some depression, too. I'm starting to come out of it. Okay, another thing. Arthritis, because of this weight, my arthritis in my knees. So what do I do to lose weight? Because I can't go to the gym. I have free gym membership because of my retirement from Tarleton, the college here.
Well, I've got a couple questions. First of all, so what kind of a tumor was it? Was it a cancerous tumor or
not? Well, they said there was cancer in that tumor.
Okay, and how long ago was your surgery?
It was 10 years ago.
Okay, so it wasn't a metastatic tumor, otherwise you wouldn't be with us. I mean, that's basically.
Right.
So afterwards, right away, did your stomach pouch out immediately?
Yeah. Well, no, you know what? When I went through menopause, that's when it pouched up.
Right. Okay, I've got a couple of suggestions, a few things that you can do. First of all, part of the stuff you're not going to be able to do. So part of it is a question. There's something called diastasis recti. It's that we've got muscles in our stomach. As we get older, we get thinner. When they're younger, they sort of girdle us in. So a typical, an example in a male would be somebody who has no body fat. Maybe they've got 2-3% body fat, and they're very, very muscular, and you see six-pack abs, and you see a line down the middle of their tummy, and that line down the middle is actually where the rectus muscle from the right and the rectus muscle from the left actually correspond and join each other. And quite often when you have surgery, that particular, those fibers are cut. And so when they're
that explains why.
Right.
I keep sucking it in all the time.
Right. So what
happened? But my incision, they did like 70 staples, and I have this huge quarter-inch scar.
No. But what happens is if that muscle never grows back, if those ligaments don't grow back, they never grow back. So they're never going to grow back. Now, the second issue is we lose muscle mass as we get older. 1% of our muscle mass gets on. So if you're the same as your high school weight and you look in the mirror and you're 60, you don't look the same as you did when you were 16 because you don't have the same muscles. But I have a recommendation. Sometimes this helps for people to help them lose weight. There is a drug called bupropion. And bupropion is used for to help people quit smoking, and it helps some people lose weight. That's right, bupropion. It is not. It is an antidepressant, but it may help you, and especially since you're coming out of depression, you may just want to give it a trial. I tell people, look, give it a 6 weeks trial, 150 milligrams to 300 milligrams. Talk to your doctor. You start out with 150 milligrams for a week or two, up it to 150 milligrams twice a day. And for some people, it helps them feel better, eat less. It stops some of the obsessive behavior that happens with smoking. And for some people, does the same thing with eating. So I think I would try that too.
Oh, bupropion. Definitely. I got to remember. I'm in a corridor and I have no pencil. So and last time I spoke to you, I was in a dressing room, half dressed. That was so funny. sorry.
Well,
I get the biggest kick.
You try bupropion. This and you take care and let us know. Bupropion is a drug.
Okay, now is that a prescription?
That is a prescription drug, but you call your doctor and see if they'll try it.
Oh, I
got
to go to a doctor?
Yeah, you got
it. Okay.
Okay, thanks
so
much.
Thank you. Bless you.
Got to get down to that cowboy capital of the world. That's what I got to do sometime.
You better come see me.
Thanks a lot.
800-462-7413. 800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, let's check in again with your favorite backseat drivers, the Grammar Police. The following email came to us from a listener named William. He writes, Dr. Zorba, on a recent show, you said something about a salutary outcome. Salutary refers to a greeting. You meant a
salutary.
Yeah.
Salutary. I got
salutary.
It.
Salutary.
Salutary.
Salutary. Salutary. Salutary.
Salutary.
If only your language.
Salutary.
If only your language skills were as good as your medical knowledge.
Oh, wow.
Keep up the good work.
Okay. Salutary. Salutary. I'll keep that in mind. Thank you. This was a salutary letter.
Were you the first to raise your hand in class? Join the ever-growing Grammar Police Force by posting on our Facebook page or sending us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
Back to the phones we go now, Zorba. A listener in Franklin, Illinois. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
Well, I have a question concerning arthritis. A year ago, I was experiencing sharp pains in the meaty part at the base of my thumb. So they did an x-ray and said, 60% of the cartilage is gone. It's arthritis. Well, and then I see people with gnarly knuckles and, that are very large, and they say that's arthritis. So is arthritis the erosion of cartilage, or is it the deposit of minerals?
Well, it's the deterioration of a joint. I mean, arthritis literally means joint inflammation. And so there are a lot of things that can happen. You can get a deterioration of the cartilage. You can have inflammation such as rheumatoid arthritis where the inflammation is very prominent. You can have osteoarthritis where the joint is just really kind of going south. It's not doing a good job, and it degenerative really, where the joint is just not up to date. So there's not really one definition. And they look different. So rheumatoid arthritis, if you go into the joint and you take fluid out of the joint, there's going to be a difference in an inflamed joint for rheumatoid arthritis than with osteoarthritis. So arthritis is a broad term. But we kind of use the term in the non-medical way for things that are not arthritis, that are really soft tissue problems. So sometimes you may actually not have a joint problem, but you may have a problem around the joint, which is a tendonitis. And then people may say, I have arthritis, when they really have a tendonitis. So the common way of using it can be different from the technical medical way that we use it. But do you have arthritis right now?
Well, you know, he says that I have arthritis as in the deterioration of the cartilage at that joint at the base of the thumb. I also have, like, two fingers that on that same hand where the last knuckle is frozen. You know, I can't bend it at all. Mm-hmm. But they are not enlarged. They don't hurt.
Right,
whereas
this
thumb thing hurts pretty much all the time.
Sure.
What do you take
for it, for your thumb thing?
Nothing, because Tylenol, if I'm just really miserable and can't go to sleep. But I've been kind of warned against the NSAIDs, the ibuprofen. Are they, you know, not the best to just take all the time?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, you know, Tylenol is safe. How much alcohol do you drink?
None.
Okay, so you could take up to 2 arthritis strength Tylenol generic 3 times a day. And that would be 1,200 milligrams times 3. That's a safe amount to take, you know, as a maximal amount. And it's a very safe drug. And some people take 2 at bedtime. I'm one of those people. You know, I've got joint deterioration in my left thumb, my right thumb, my wrist on the other side. And I take 2 arthritis strength Tylenol pretty much every night in the morning. If I'm bothered, I take 2 in the morning, and that works. And if it's really painful, then I take an NSAID. And that's reduced my NSAID use, which has more side effects. Tylenol, you know, as long as you're less than 2 drinks a day. And I often have a beer or a glass of wine at nighttime. You know, I don't do it every night. But I certainly don't, you know, I don't binge drink. So I can take an NSAID when I want to, but I don't take very many of them. But that's what I would do. I mean, why suffer? I'm against suffering.
Okay.
Good luck.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you much.
Sure.
Thanks,
we appreciate that call. And before we head out, Zorba, let's open up the old Zorba Pastor on Your Health mailbag for a listener question. This one comes from listener Kyle. Hi, Zorba and Tom. I eat an apple every day. I enjoy eating the entire apple, including the seeds. Mm-hmm. My wife wondered if I am getting too much arsenic from the seeds by doing that. Do you know?
Oh, well, first of all, there is some arsenic in apples, but arsenic is all around us, and you're not going to get arsenic poisoning from eating those seeds, probably unless you ate somebody asked this years ago, and I calculated that you had to eat, I think, about a dozen apples every day for a year to actually get enough arsenic might be present to do that. And so I don't think I would worry. I actually calculated once how much of a playground, because arsenic is used in playground equipment, or at least it used to be in wooden playground equipment to make sure to keep the wood safe. And I once calculated how much wood you had to chew to actually get arsenic poisoning. And it was a ton of wood. It wasn't just chewing.
Oh, my goodness.
It was a lot. It wasn't actually a ton. I mean, a ton. It was a lot.
Yeah.
It was a lot. It wasn't actually a ton. So the answer is no, you can eat all the way down to the core and chew the seed, you know, but you've heard the phrase spit out the seeds. Maybe you want to do that, but there's no problem with it.
Have a healthy living question for Zorba? Just post it to our Facebook page or send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org. Or don't forget Facebook.
And don't forget you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen. Our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, asking you to join us on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0930Z. More information on Zorba, his clinic, and healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, and show archives, is available online at zorbapastor.org.